Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Lauren.
I'm Felicia.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff. And we were just chatting about our bachelorette parties.
It's very exciting. Yeah. The best thing that we're going to do this year besides getting married is the bachelorette.
Probably. Lauren found some cool like spooky bachelorette decor that I thought was pretty sick.
Yeah.
I love
it. Well, I was going to say, too, we should say sorry that we are releasing this a little later than normally. I know we missed last week. I've been so busy with work, and Felicia took pity on me as a kind friend.
No, it's fine. I love when things get canceled. It's my favorite thing. Like, whenever someone's like, so sorry. Is there any way we could not do this? And I'm like, thank you, Lord. I love to not do things.
It feels like a weird gift.
It is a gift. It is a gift.
And I never, like, I always
time
feel funny.
I didn't know I had.
Yes. And I always feel funny because I'm like, I'm always like, not nervous, but like, there's always like a moment where I'm like, oh, I feel bad, like letting Felicia down. And then whenever you're like, yes, is the best response.
I mean, the truth is, don't ever picture me sitting at my computer furiously doing research and then getting disappointed. Don't picture that, because what it is
that's
no research has been done. A topic has not been picked. And I'm like, well, thank God.
Well, thank God. A miracle today.
A miracle.
I've been feeling like a sort of lack of inspiration for Sinister Sisters topics. I feel like,
me
I don't
too.
Know what
like
that
today,
is.
It was so hard for me to find something. I was like, oh my God, I feel like I've done everything. So people, we need recommendations because we're getting lost in the sauce here. We're getting a little.
We are. I'm wondering if, like, I'm like, maybe we should start getting, maybe we should, like, go back to, like, you and I are both, like, let's do whatever this week, because maybe it would help. But then I'm like,
what
do
you
mean? Think of what that whatever is. Like, let's both do, you know, women folklore creatures, or let's both do, like, a true crime story, or someone disappearing, or like a freaky location or something.
That could be useful. So yeah, okay. Yeah, that could be good actually. Maybe let's do that. Like a topic,
then
a
I'm
theme,
like,
a
it
theme
feels
if you
easy,
will.
Right? It feels easier if I'm like, all right, this week we're going to pick a spooky location, and then I'm
versus
like, oh, that's
like
better.
This deep abyss of the internet. Could be anything.
A million things. I know. Yeah. Well, so I was going to say, I actually am so excited. I'm just going to go into recommendations if that's okay.
Hit it.
Because I like, my number one documentary that I love watching is Cult Stuff.
Oh yeah.
And so
for sure.
I finally watched, have you watched The Cult of Mother God on HBO yet?
No, but I think I've heard of it.
Is wild. I'm sure you've like seen like the image of the documentary is like a very like blonde, like looks like kind of like a businesswoman in the picture that they have.
I have not seen this.
It's crazy. It's like basically we talked about it at, like James and I talked about it after we watched it, where I was like, I can't decide if the woman really, like if the cult leader woman like really believes it or not. But basically she's like claiming that she is God, like brought to earth in a human body.
Yeah.
And yes. And so, you know, she always talks about like at some point she will like move on into her heavenly form. And so it's like always kind of like, you know, it's leading to her dying, or like, you know, it's kind of like the way that the cult's going. But it's like basically, I don't know, it's just, it feels like to me, like all these cults that are like a male leader who's basically like, I'm going to take all these wives and like everyone do what I say. And like, these are the things. It's basically like that, except it's just a woman. So I was sort of like, kind of amazing.
You're sort of on her side in this weird way, where you're just like, it's like whatever women do, I'm like, you know what? You go do your thing.
Yeah. You've been told you're the less than gender your entire life. Like, honestly, if you can get. Yeah. It's like she's got multiple lovers and like all these people like just like bowing down to her and like brushing her hair and like washing her and like carrying her. And I'm like, kind of love it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check it out for sure. Oh, you know like, what we're going to watch tonight? This is so like. Willy Wonka's on HBO, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Travis was like, oh, Willy Wonka's on HBO. And I was like, it is? And he was like, do you want to watch it tonight? And I was like, more than anything. So tonight, We're going to watch the Willy Wonka movie so I can watch Timothy do his silly little thing and silly little dance.
I mean, did I tell you my experience? I'm sure I talked about it really on the podcast.
I don't know.
But like, I was like grouchy. I was like mad to be watching it. I was like, can't even remember. I was just like in a bad mood and like kind of anxious. Yeah. And like, mm-hmm. I just remember like James not like handed it. Me like a piece of candy, and I like, my instinct was to like smack it out of his hand. Like, I was like, I was like, not in a good place. And then it started, and I was like, wow, delightful. Like, why was I so crouchy?
What is joy? Yeah, so I'm pretty stoked about it, honestly.
I can't even decide if it's a good movie, but I was just like,
I don't really care. I don't really care if it is. There's some movies where I'm just like, it's not about that.
Exactly.
What is it about? I don't know. A vibe.
A vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I also, other story from this week, we did show Willow Labyrinth, and she loved it.
Oh, my God.
It was everything that I dreamed.
That's so great. That's so great. Yeah. That's okay. It was really funny. I wish I had seen it as a kid. I didn't really see it until I was an adult.
Yeah. I think it really hits, obviously. And, like, she was, like, totally blown away by the puppets. Like, how did they do this? Like, you know, she was like, totally. None of this is CGI. And I was like, I know.
I know.
It's crazy.
That's great. That's awesome. I love that.
And then we did show her Dark Crystal, which is like the other. I don't even think I made you watch that. Did you ever watch that?
I've seen clips of the puppets in that.
Yeah. It's like, it was so funny because I feel like I was like trying to prep her. Like, I was like, this to me is not as good. And then when the movie was over, she was like, I just felt like we needed David Bowie. And I was like, exactly.
The child gets it. The child gets it. That's so
anyway,
great.
Anyway, so I think those are mine this week. Did you have anything else you watched?
Yeah, I watched this like a couple weeks ago. But I think you recommended this to me at some point, When Evil Lurks, the Spanish movie.
Oh, yeah. Wait, yes. Brutal. Did you like it? What did you think?
Yeah, I did like it. But it was brutal. Like, I have not watched a movie that brutal in a while. That had that much violence.
The dog with the kids,
children.
Yes,
it's so crazy. So
that like adorable little girl.
I know, just getting swung around by the neck. It's so freaking crazy. And what's funny is, so when I went to Baltimore a few weeks ago, my brother and his wife and I, we sat down to watch it. They turned it on. Of course, I passed out in the first 5 minutes.
Instantly.
And at
sweet
some
music
point, Andreas,
to you. A lullaby.
Yeah, exactly. And then Andreas, my brother, I guess, fell asleep at some point. And then, like, his wife, Kira, was the only one, like, awake watching this horrifying movie that she didn't even ask to watch. And I was like, well, and the next day I was like, how was it? And he was like, it was brutal. And I was like, oh, okay. But he said it was, like, interesting. Like, it was definitely an interesting film. Like, it was just super brutal. And so then, I guess, last week or something, I was like, okay, I'm going to try again and watch it. And, yeah, like, it was pretty epic for sure. I'm not sure it's a perfect film or anything, but
yes,
it was nice to see filmmakers go that hard, you know?
That's how I felt. I think, I don't know. There are some movies where I'm just like, good for them. Like,
that's exactly. Demian Rugna. I'm sure I said that so wrong.
The director.
Yeah. But yeah,
it was
cool.
Yeah, James hated it. I know I said it last time, but like, he hated it, and I was just like, I don't know. Sometimes I like to be contrarian, like just to like fight the opposite opinion. But yeah, I really felt like I was just like, good for them.
What did he hate about it? Do you think it was,
I can't,
like,
now I'm like, I know he had, he had like good points. Like, he felt like it was just like not well, like he was like, the shots don't make sense. Like, the acting's not very good. And I was just like, I liked it. I don't really notice that stuff.
I don't really notice. Not when there's little kids getting thrown around.
Well, and it's all subtitled, right? So I think I don't know if I'm as good at like judging acting with subtitles.
In another language. I kind of know what you mean.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I thought they were really giving it their all.
Did you ever watch that movie Piggy?
No, but I want to.
It's on Hulu
now. That was like
now.
On my list. Okay.
Yeah. I was going to watch it last night and I started it and I guess I was like, this movie is so freaking weird. What's wrong with this thing? And then I realized I had the English dub on. I didn't realize it was a Spanish movie. And I was
oh,
like,
oh, I didn't know that either.
I was like watching it and I was like, something is wrong. Like, what's wrong with this movie? And I was like, oh my God, I have the dubs on. Like, this is not a movie in English.
That's really funny.
And then I got distracted, but I'm gonna watch it. I think it's probably gonna be kind of brutal as well.
It looked intense. I remember being like, oof, that's gonna be one.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything about stop motion? That's the next on my list. But anyway, I haven't seen it.
Oh yeah. No, I didn't see much. I saw like a little video that looked exciting.
I was convinced. Yeah. So maybe next week we'll or
oh,
soon
did you see
we'll
Lisa Frankenstein?
That. Yes, I loved it.
Great. I haven't gone yet. Every weekend I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go and then I don't. Yeah.
You gotta.
I might just wait at this point.
I mean, yeah, I don't know that it's one that you really need to see in theaters necessarily.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Oh, it's already on like Fandango at Home and Amazon. But it's like for like $20. So I it'll probably come to something pretty shortly.
I felt sad because I saw a lot of bad reviews and I was like, did I just like it?
Never forget Jennifer's Body's reviews.
Never forget.
Sometimes people are just stupid.
I think that's what it was again. Like I just, and even in the theater, like we went to a theater like opening weekend, I think, or pretty soon after, like on a Saturday night. And like, I really still felt like I was like only one of the few people laughing. Like I was like, what's happening? Nobody with me?
Nobody with me? Nobody liking this?
I think I also, I don't know if you're this way too. I honestly think there have been very few movies I've seen in movie theaters that I'm disappointed by because I just love the experience.
Love the experience.
Of, like,
I'm the same exact way. Except for Dune, I will say. That was...
Couldn't do it.
I was like, what is this?
Did you see the first one?
That's the only one I saw. Travis and I went and we walked out. And Travis was like, it's so funny. Like, I was kind of like, that was so whatever to me. Like, that meant nothing to me.
Agreed.
Travis was like,
agreed.
That was terrible. How dare they make us sit through that? He's like, nothing happened.
I couldn't tell which way Travis would go. Okay. Okay.
He really hated it. He's like, nothing happened. I was like,
so I guess you're not going to Dune 2.
Nah, I'm good. I'm good on it.
You'll watch Wonka and get. And get enough
Timothy.
Yeah,
I'll get enough Timothy for sure. But yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Hilarious.
It's so funny. I really, I couldn't have predicted Travis's take on Dune, but I feel the same as you. I was kind of like, I don't know.
I was like, I was like,
maybe I should read the
any
book.
Of that. Yeah.
No. Truly, my older brother is like obsessed. Like he read the books. God. He's like all into it. And I'm just like, I can't. If I like don't know the lore, like I just I or whatever, like the world, the creature, the races, the all of them, like
it's so much
complicated. So
much. And it felt so much less accessible to me than like Lord of the Rings or something like that. Like I was like, this is like when I was watching, I was like, this feels inaccessible if you don't know what's going on already.
Literally like no clue. I was like, I felt the same way where I ended the movie and I was like, so what was the plot?
What was the plot? Literally no clue.
We're all trying to wrangle sandworms and like,
I don't know become
the leader.
I don't know. I still couldn't tell you. I don't remember anything that happened.
I think it's so funny. This is now going to be just called We Don't Like Dune, the podcast.
The podcast, yeah. I was trying to think if I watched anything else, but not really. Oh, you know what I started watching last night, which was just a bunch of people had recommended it to me. It's a Cartoon Network show called Over the Garden Wall. Have you watched that?
No.
It's sort of like Adventure Time, but just like cottagecore. And it's really cute. Like when I saw the poster, I thought it was an old show. Like it looks like it'd be like something really old. Like from the 80s or something, but it's
Elijah
a
Wood?
Yeah, I think so. And it's just like this nice little show, but it's like kind of spooky, kind of like Adventure Time meets Courage the Cowardly
Dog.
Oh, but
it's 2014.
Oh, maybe it's not as new as I thought, but it's not from the
80s. I mean, it's still like, it's not like an old show. Yeah.
But I started watching
that. It looks so cute.
And I did like it. I did like that.
Well, maybe I'll add that because I feel like we actually were just talking about how we need like a new like kind of like fluff show.
Do you watch, Travis and I just watched it and it's old, so, or at least it's a few years old, that Nickelodeon documentary, The Orange Years or whatever?
I never watch it, but I always, it was one of those things I was like, oh, I should see it.
We watched it and had the best time. Highly recommend. Aww. Like both of us were just like, yeah. Like we were so happy, like so excited. And it was just like so nostalgic for like, I mean, aww, we ended the movie and we were both just like, and he said it first, but I was like, I agree. He's like, we're just so, we grew up in the best time to be a kid. Like everything yeah. was like for us, but also sort of by us yeah. in this way. And I was like, hell,
I just
yeah.
feel so lucky for when, like when social media hit, when the internet really hit.
Oh my
for,
God.
Like, it's not totally. Like we had trouble like researching for projects. Like we, mm-hmm. I don't know, we had it so easy. I feel like where it was like, everything was easy and accessible, but like,
but I wasn't getting cyberbullied.
Yes, yeah. I can't handle it. I can't actually think about what our kids are gonna like their experience of
I
all
know.
That.
We talked about that a little bit about just like we're gonna like even if our kids hate us for it, like there's gonna be screen time limits because it's
it's scary,
healthy, and you don't know what's going on in there. Like it's not like your kid's coming home with a black eye. It's like they're coming home with a punched soul.
Like, I don't know,
like it's just so, I don't know, it's scary,
it's so different. I don't know if I've ever talked to, this is now I'm just digressing, but like my older brother like had no screens for their daughter until she was two, and I'm like, I kind of loved it. It was like it required our whole family to be like much more present because like people couldn't even really be on their phones because you're like, because she would like come grab it and Andrew would be like, put your phone away. Like it was kind of intense, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like not having the TV on in the background, like, you know.
Like what if he actually had to spend time together and like,
and now she like, it's so sweet. He lets her watch like one movie on Saturday mornings and she is like psyched for her one movie on Saturday morning.
Aww.
And she's seen like, you know, every Disney movie now because she watches just like one Disney movie each weekend.
That's amazing. That's wild.
It's
let's
very
do
pure.
This. Let's hit it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
So I'm covering the Bunyip today. And so I should say that I watched one of James's like movie screenings that he did. There was this movie called Frog Dreaming and it has the little kid from E.T. and now all of Mike Flanagan stuff. But the Frog Dreaming movie is like it's set in Australia and they like talk about the bunyip, which is like kind of like a swamp creature from Australian like Aboriginal mythology. And so it's, the name has been translated to devil or evil spirit, and the bunyip first appeared in the Sydney Gazette in 1812. And it was used by Javes Ives to describe what he called a large black animal, like a seal, with a terrible voice. So,
a seal with a terrible voice.
I'm like picturing like a cute little seal.
He's
like
just tone deaf. He just can't sing. Sorry.
So I love it. So it was described as amphibious, almost fully aquatic, and it really hasn't been like sighted on land. It's mostly in lakes, rivers, swamps, lagoons, water holes, all these things. So physical descriptions, like some other folklore creatures we have covered, vary widely. So before 1847, George French Angus basically talked to indigenous people. This was a group of people called the Morundi people of the Murray River. And they had difficulty describing it, and that its most usual form is said to be that of an enormous starfish. So,
whoa, nice.
Again, widely different versions of this creature. Eugenie, I think is how you say her name. Eugenie Louise McNeil recalled from a childhood memory in the 1890s that the bunyip supposedly had a snout like an owl and was probably a nocturnal creature. So as like kind of as I was like doing more research, basically it's like the bunyips are either seal, swimming dog sort of territory. That's like 60%, I feel like, of what you see. And then like 20% are more like long necked creatures, kind of more like Loch Ness monster territory, like small heads, long necks. And the seal dog variety is most often described as 4 to 6 feet long with shaggy black or brown coat. And then in those reports, it's more like round head. The research I found is like it resembles a bulldog with prominent ears, no tail, and whiskers like a seal or otter. And then the long-necked kind is always bigger. It's like 5 to 15 feet long. It's said still to have the black or brown fur, large ears, small tusks, a head like a horse or emu, which I'm like, those are very different. I'm like imagining like a long neck of an emu with like a long head of a horse, maybe.
That would be so heavy. No.
Really heavy. Heavy head. I'll definitely put pictures up too of different like depictions of it. And in this version, the neck is like 3 feet long. There's many folds of skin on it. So either way, it's sort of these like, yeah, I feel like we're in sort of swamp creature territory. So bunyips, according to mythology, can swim with fins or flippers. They have a loud roaring call, as we kind of talked about, and fed on crayfish, although some stories paint them as just straight up human killers who eat women and children. So again, kind of a range of how scary they are. And indigenous people claim that the bunyip uses its long arms and legs to kill its prey by hugging it to death. So I'm like sort of like snake, you know, like squeezing it to death.
Hugging it to death. Wild.
That's how I like to kill ex-boyfriends too. Just kidding.
Buddy.
Okay. So one legend says that a man named Bunyip, so how did it become a bunyip, or like what was it? One of the legends is that a man named Bunyip broke the rainbow serpent's greatest law by eating his totem animal. And then he was banished by a good spirit, and the man became an evil spirit that lured tribesmen and their livestock into the water so he could eat all of them. And that's like kind of the only version of like how the bunyip was born that I found.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been a couple, you know, and this again, like I'm going to do like a very short version of all the different sightings because there's a lot, and we're going to get into this more too, but it also is like a pretty like big tourist creature. Like it's in a lot of pop culture. It's in like TV shows and movies and pretty famous. But some of the sightings, so in January 1846, a strange skull was taken by a settler, and this was near New South Wales. And initial reports suggested that they hadn't seen anything like this in science. And the person who found it said that all the indigenous people to whom it was shown called it a bunyip. But by July 1847, several experts had now identified it as the deformed fetal skull of like a cow or a horse. Yeah.
Hmm.
Kind of gross. But at the same time, like while they were like, I don't think this is real, the skull was actually put on display in the Australian Museum for 2 days. And people came and like talked about
having
sightings themselves. Yeah, checked it out. And I was like, only for 2 days? But anyway, people came and saw it. And then it was like, they were like, oh, this is not actually a bunyip, and took it down. Also in 1847, the Sydney Morning Herald, which is, you know, a newspaper, reported an eyewitness encounter between a herdsman and the bunyip. And the man said it was as big as a calf with large ears, which it pricked up when it perceived him, had a thick mane of hair from the head down the neck and 2 large tusks. He turned to run away, and this creature, equally alarmed, ran off too with an awkward, this is all a quote, shambling gallop, which I just like that imagery. There's more sightings that I could talk about. Maybe I'll do one more. So
yeah, sure.
In 1852, William Buckley, who was an escaped convict, wrote in his biography, and this is a long quote that I'll read. So in Lake Moodwarri, I think is how you say that, as well as in most of the others inland, is a very extraordinary amphibious animal, which the natives call Bunyip. Buckley's account suggests that he saw this creature more than once, but he said, "I could never see any part except the back, which appeared to be covered with feathers of a dusky gray color. It seemed to be about the size of a full-grown calf. I could never learn from any of the natives that they had seen either the head or tail." So this, I think, is interesting because it's really our first time hearing feathers. But that was, again, like the only version of that that I could see, that it was – that there were feathers on it at all. All of the other ones are mostly that brown or black fur that we kind of – that I mentioned earlier. Oh, yeah.
It's that with this many different – versions of it, they just weren't naming these different creatures, like, but for some reason, right? They're all seen as the Bunyip is really interesting,
and literally just like, oh, that's the Bunyip still.
yeah it's like, what is
with
that?
All this,
it's interesting.
I don't know how, if it's just like things getting lost and
probably,
you know, sort of telephone
over time.
Yeah So I also think it's cool that in the 1850s Bunyip was starting to be used as like a colloquial — is that how you say that?
Yeah.
Colloquial term for like imposter or pretender or humbug.
Oh, interesting.
So it became like slang, like a people like would call each other that.
Yeah.
And then just to mention some of the, you know, some of its star turns. So it's appeared in children's books, a live action TV series. There's a statue. And the statue is actually – okay, so the statue was commissioned by the ACT government for Gungahlins Town Park, and it was installed in front of the Gungahlin Library in 2011. So that's cool, and I'll include a picture of the Bunyip statue. There's also a ragtime musical comedy called Bunyip that was that was created in 1916. And then – there is like a coin operated Bunyip that you can like ride on at, like, it's at Stewart Reserve on the town's riverfront. And then, as I mentioned, the 1986 film Frog Dreaming centers around the search for a Bunyip. And what else? There's an independent film called The Red Billabong that was released in 2016 that talks about the Bunyip. So definitely more movies, books, stories, TV shows, artwork. I obviously learned about it from Frog Dreaming, but there is a lot out there and a lot of different kind of sightings. I didn't want to get into like too many because I feel like it's similar to, you know, other folklore creatures we've covered where it's like, I saw a black, you know, dark creature in the water. It feels kind of like that, but you can definitely do your own research if you're interested. And I do think Australia is like sort of unexplored for us in some ways. So I'm like, I kind of want to look into more of their stuff because at least for crime, like I feel like some of their true crime is so crazy.
Totally.
And I'm like, I bet they've got crazy creatures too. I mean, their real creatures are crazy. They're like giant bugs and
that's
snakes
true.
And stuff.
I just was looking at the Frog Dreaming, just like,
yeah,
it looks like the Goonies.
Yes, it's totally that feeling.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Like, it's very cute. And it's the kid from E.T.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Very nice.
But that's the Bunyip.
That's the Bunyip. Very good. Very good. Very good. Okay, cool. I'm doing also a creature this week, and I have found this creature that made me want to aspire to be this creature. It's the Samadeva. So Samadeva is a Bulgarian, like, woodland fairy nymph, gorgeous woman. And she's so beautiful. So she's basically, and also I love that Diva is at the end of her name, Samadeva. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
I just like it. But who's to say? But so she's kind of this ethereal woman with long, gorgeous hair. and has and is always dressed in this like white feathered free-flowing gown.
Like
it's like I want to be her. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Sama divas typically have blonde or red hair. They're tall and like slender and pale, and they have these like glowing eyes, and they're like sirens, you know. They're just these beautiful creatures.
Incredible.
Yeah. They're depicted typically in like forests. Sometimes they're seen riding deer with snakes as reins, which I think is like, once again,
I love
want
that
to be me. Did I ever tell
imagine
you?
Imagine you coming in for your wedding. Snakes
me,
as reins.
Riding in on a deer. One time, my friend Rosie did this like meditation with me to find my spirit animal. And my, did I ever tell you this?
No.
My spirit animal was a reindeer, which I was like, what? But like this, I had this like whole experience like leading around and walking with this reindeer. And
whoa.
It was amazing. So I don't know.
I love that.
I feel connected to the Sama Diva.
Yeah.
So in Bulgarian folklore, they can live in trees, shacks, caves, near rivers and ponds, sometimes in the mountains, just anywhere that's like very nature-y, it seems. And they can be good and they can be bad. So I am going to read like a tale, like a, it's the Sama Diva and the Shepherd. And I will read that. But it's interesting that, and I feel like there's some creatures like this we've covered in the past where it's like, depending on the human, they will either be like cool with them and like help them if they're lost or just something like that. Or if it's a man that bothers them, they'll just freaking destroy them. So they, like, for example, okay, so I'm on the this Warriors of Myth fandom website, and it says in some cases they've been known to visit children at birth and bestow upon them unfortunate gifts or even curses. This is like the negative version. They may claw the they claw out the eyes of young maidens in a fit of jealousy.
Oh my gosh.
Sama divas also dance. So this is like, sorry, I should have said this earlier, but they're known for their dancing. And so they like dance under the moonlight and like their groups of women, like all of them dance together under the moonlight. It's like very
amazing,
joyful, free-spirited dance. And if you interrupt that dancing, they will attack you because like it is like their ritual.
I love
it. They might even behead you, which would be wild.
Exciting.
yeah. But all of their power, it seems, lies, and this is in one version, so it might change across versions, seems to lie in their veil or their dress is actually where their power is. And if they lose that item of clothing, they can lose their powers. So that's a bummer. In terms of, and this is their abilities, so there's some different things on here than there are on like kind of the general pages I've seen, but I'll read them anyway. So their magical abilities, according to this page, says they can communicate with animals. They can cause a stroke in someone. Like they can like shoom and like cause a stroke. They can take away someone's sight or hearing. They can fly, which once again is like due to their dresses. They can heal a body from injury or illness. So if like you're nice to them and you need help, they might heal you. They can
be very kind.
Yeah. It's like they're either kind or lethal. It's like this kind of like, what is that? They can't. I haven't seen much about this. This says they can shapeshift. I haven't seen much about that on other websites. They can bring about rain or storm. I've seen that kind of across a bunch. And yeah, and their big weakness is like basically being seen naked. Like if they lose their gown, they lose their power, which is like sort of, I don't know, metaphor for something dark.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to read you this tale. So this is off some website because this is like a tale that's been told 1,000 bajillion times. The version I'm reading is off this like Thule transcript bulletin where people just submit things. Like it doesn't even say who wrote this, but I'm just going to read it to you anyway. Okay. Yeah. Once upon a time, in the small town of Dobrinjsk, near the Piran Mountains of Bulgaria, there lived a shepherd named Avilo. All of his life, Avilo had heard tales of the Samadeva, the creatures only some had seen. But Avilo had heard them singing, and he longed to see whoever made such captivating music. People said the Samadeva were beautiful beyond imagining. They were always dressed in white gowns with belts of rainbow colors. They were said to ride upon the backs of deers using twisted snakes as reins. Whenever a hunter accidentally killed a Samadeva's deer, she cast a spell on him soon after he died. The Samadeva lived in the deepest parts of the forest, always near water. But in the wintertime, they were said to move to Zemkovo, at the edge of the world, to live among other mythical creatures. But one autumn night, Avilo heard the Samadeva, and he decided he must find them all. People said they washed their clothes in the river at dusk. If any man stole a Samadeva's clothes, she had to become his wife. So Avilo followed the sounds of their voices, and before long he came upon them dancing. He hid behind the trees to watch, and he fell in love. They were more graceful than any woman he had ever seen. But he was careful. People said sometimes the Samadeva invited a young man to dance with them. As soon as the sun rose, they disappeared, and the man died from exhaustion. They also said the Samadeva loved the shepherd's pipe, and Avilo was one of the finest players of the pipes. He watched the women as they held hands and danced in a circle around an ancient walnut tree. Blue light glowed from the roots of the tree, and wreaths of beautiful yellow flowers crowned the golden hair of each Samadeva. Their gowns fluttered, shining in the moonlight. He could hear the sound of a flute's eerie notes that seemed to draw the woman in. As the tempo grew faster, the women kept pace, dancing through the grass, twisting and twirling. They seemed to go on for hours. Suddenly, a shrill note sang into the night, and the women let go of one another's hands and raised them to the sky. Their belts loosened, their gowns slipped off, and Avilo feared they might hear his gasp as the woman ran towards the river. Avilo quickly ran forward and grabbed one of the gowns, and when the Samadeva returned, there was one left alone, one without the power to vanish. Her eyes looked panicked, and Avilo's heart went out to her. "I'm here," he said. "I love you. I wish to marry you." That is how Avilo and Marika, the Samadeva, came to marry. When they returned to Avilo's house, he hid the gown away, and from that day on, he and his wife lived happily. Avilo forgot all about his caution and fears, and 3 years passed. One autumn day, 3 years after that day in the forest, Marika gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. The couple chose St. John to be the child's godfather, and they held a grand feast to celebrate the birth. At the feast, St. John asked Marika to dance. Avilo was overjoyed with the idea of seeing his wife dance again, so he began to play upon his flute. Marika began to dance, but St. John shook his head. "You're not dancing like the beautiful Samadeva," he said. "What's wrong?" Marika frowned. "I cannot dance without my gown," she explained. St. John looked at Avilo. "Give her the gown," he said, "so that she may dance with joy." Certain that Marika would never leave him and their child, Avilo pulled the gown from its hiding place and gave it to his wife. The moment she put it on, she twirled in a pirouette such that no one had ever seen. With that, she turned to Avilo and said, "I told you. A house does not suit a Samadeva. Goodbye." She disappeared forever, returning to the world of her sisters, the Samadevas.
Oh.
The end.
So good.
Yeah. And I like that. I mean, that last line of like, "I told you a house couldn't hold me." And it's like, this wasn't for me. You stole me. And like, there's something very powerful about that.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's really beautiful artwork around the Samadiva, because they're obviously just these like beautiful, gorgeous, woodsy mother nature women. Mm-hmm. But we'll post some of that. But yeah, that's the Samadiva from Bulgaria.
I love it. Very like witch vibes, dancing in the forest, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. And now our inspiration.
And now our inspiration for our whole existence.
Cool. Samadiva.
Well, thank you all for listening.
Yes, we hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.